We are activating your unique self-discovery one show at a time. The Orchard of Wisdom Self-Discovery Podcast are at your fingertips, just waiting to inspire and invite you in discovering just how awesome you really are and how to navigate through life in joy, enrichment, personal abundance, in mind, body, spirit, heart, and soul. All the people we bring you are here to serve you on your journey of life. Do enjoy our next show. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Mental Health Awareness, right here on selfdiscoverymedia.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my wonderful repeat guest is Greg Hammer. We're going to be talking about the resolution to improve your mental wellness, your well-beingness. What does he mean by that? What kind of resolution are we meant to have here in 2023? How do we improve our mental health? I think first and foremost, we need to acknowledge that a lot of people are in mental distress right now. How do we improve that well-beingness? There's a lot of things that we need to learn here. He says people are experiencing a prolonged period of chronic stress that's unprecedented in their lifetimes. The pandemic, global food shortages, climate uncertainty, the war in Ukraine, and ongoing threats of war all contribute to this stress. Many people feel that they weren't able to prioritize their mental health while focusing on the physical health during the pandemic. Gen Z is driving the push towards prioritizing mental and emotional well-being. They're realizing that health is a holistic pursuit that includes the mind as well as the body. What is it about the winter that makes us feel more prone to anxiety, depression, and burnout? We're going to be discussing that. What is the decreased sunlight lowers that vitamin D levels? And how can we lower our serotonin levels? And how can we feel, you know, the causes of depression and what we can do about it? All of these type of things we're going to be talking about today. Greg has been on with us here before. I do invite you to come and listen to his previous show with us. He is a professor at Stanford University School of Medicine, pediatric intensive care physician, pediatric anthologist, I probably didn't pronounce that right, mindfulness expert, and the author of Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare for Professionals. So welcome back, Greg. It's wonderful to have you here.
Great to be with you again, Sarah.
I called this about 2 years ago, and I said that as we come out of the COVID pandemic, we're going to be in an emotional and economical pandemic. And we're really in that worldwide right now. This is not just a North American concern. This is worldwide. Everybody's navigating the repercussions of the lockdowns, the redirections, the pivoting. The fear is still very much with us with all these different variants, etc. War in Ukraine. Is there going to be a recession? All the news sensationalism. And just people are just overwrought at the present moment, aren't they? And it's like, take a breath, look at what you can do, the next step, rather than feeling overwhelmed by everything. Easier said than done, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you left out politics.
Right. Oh, God. Yes, it has to come in, doesn't it? Because, of course, talk about the turmoil there. That's a tornado on its own.
Yes. Well, it's a time for us to really focus on our plan. You know, people talk a lot about New Year's resolutions. I think that's good, but resolutions are sort of like goals. And I think we also really need to focus on right now.
Yeah.
What is my plan today? And I think, you know, we are all stressed out, as you pointed out in the intro. This has been just the most stressful, difficult period of time in my lifetime, in my seventh decade. And it just has been, I've been really rather unscathed and very fortunate, and I count my blessings every day. But for so many of us, it has just been an incredibly difficult time. And I think we all need to take a deep breath and drop the judgments, not only of what's going on in the world and people that might appear to be perpetrating some of the stressful events and drop the judgments of others and most of all, perhaps ourselves. And that is the most difficult thing. And as you know, Sarah, judging is in our DNA, if you will. Our brains are hardwired, I think, through tens of thousands of years of evolution to be very analytical, to find difficult challenges in our environment that might represent danger or hazard. Mm-hmm. And so we are wired to really judge things around us, not only as safe or unsafe, hazardous or not, but also good or bad. And we have to ask ourselves, do these judgments really help us?
Right. And are they really necessary in this moment? Yes.
I think a lot of us have been very self-judgmental.
Yeah.
And we feel as though, you know, we're isolated, we're this separate self, and we have secrets that we don't want to let on, and we're ashamed and so on. And I think these are the results of chronic stress in part, or at least chronic stress exacerbates our judgments and self-judgments. So part of our plan needs to learn how to drop the judgment. And that is the end and gain is non-judgment.
So well, where does judgment come from, though? You know, I mean, that judgment, a lot of the time, it's from the unknown, or it's the expectation of others that impose upon us. You know, it's that I've got a certain standard I need to live up to. And if I'm not living up to that, or society is not living up to that, it will be judged. Religion has put a great deal of judgment on us. We're always judging politicians and everybody else around us. I think we've forgotten the flawsomeness of humanity, right? And that, you know, people do what they do based on what they know in the moment. And if they took a breath and paused, digested how they felt before they reacted, then perhaps we wouldn't need, you know, the judgment. Or the judgment, I think, is a great deal to do with the fear of ridicule, the fear of feeling less than. What do you think?
Yes, I think so. I think, you know, we're talking about having a plan, a plan for right now, a plan for today. And I think laying the groundwork for that, we need to acknowledge the way our brains work. And there are a couple of ways our brains work that apparently veil our ability to be happy, even though I believe that happiness is our true nature. Mm-hmm. It's veiled by the way our brains are wired. And so our plan has to be to rewire our brains. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that. But one of the qualities that we have that appears to be hardwired into the way we think and behave is negativity.
Yes.
Tend to have a negativity bias. And that is, we tend to look at the world with a bit of negativity. We tend to see others a bit negatively. And here's the judgment.
Yeah.
And most of all, we have negative thoughts about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Another way that our brains appear to be hardwired is that we're very distracted by the past and the future. Mm-hmm. So we are constantly mulling over things that have happened and may happen. And combined with our negativity bias, we often do this in a way that results in a negative outlook of our own past, things we've done, things we've said, and we tend to feel shame and regret. And with regard to the future, we catastrophize. We cast a negativity over what may happen. We think of the worst thing that may happen. And most of the time that's maladaptive. Mm-hmm. And that thing never happens, never comes into reality. Mm-hmm. And yet it generates fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
So our negativity bias, our distraction with the past and present and past and future, difficulty being present.
Yeah.
I think are two factors that apparently veil our happiness. And the good news is that if we have a plan, we can rewire our brains, but we have to be intentional about it. We're doing the GAIN acronym backwards, I guess. We start with non-judgment. The I in GAIN is intention. We have to be purposeful. But again, you know, I'm an optimist. The good news is that we have the ability to rewire our brains to change the way we think, to be positive rather than negative, and to be present rather than overly distracted with the past and future.
All we have is the now, really. And what we do in the now will dictate what happens next.
Yeah, we have only a series of present moments, if you will.
Yeah.
That's the only experience we truly ever have.
Yeah.
So yes, I agree with you. But we often miss out on it because our thoughts are taking us to the past or future.
Yeah, I mean, I recently kind of came across that. I do suffer from clinical depression, and I generally can get a hold of it. But in the last couple of weeks, it's been rather weighing hard. And it's like, well, why? And I realize I have a lot on my plate this year. Some of it I've put them myself, some of it's been put upon me. And I realized I was letting it all clump together. And, you know, after talking with a friend and kind of just going through a little bit of centering and getting back to core, I realized I don't have to do everything at once. Why am I getting so stressed out? I do this now. When that's finished, I do that, and then that, and then that, and then it's less daunting. It kind of reminds me when I was at boarding school and we'd go for walks in the marsh, and the teacher would, we're going to walk all the way over there, and you look at it, go, oh God, so far. But we had a teacher said, we're going to go look at that bush. Now we're going to go look at that tree. Now we're going to go look at that. And the next thing you know, you were back home and you didn't realize you'd walked so far. So by having a plan and doing one step at a time, you're not putting that pressure on you of, I've got to get it all done, and then you do nothing.
Well, you know, that's we think of kind of walking or running our way through life. And again, yes, we cast our thoughts into the future and it seems insurmountable.
Yes.
If we are, you know, I love to cycle. So, you know, if I'm looking at a hill that's coming up and I think, oh my gosh, you know, how am I going to get to the top of that hill? And the answer is one rotation at a time. And so the answer is to focus on each rotation and bring your focus back to the present moment. I think that, of course, almost all of us suffer from depression at times, obviously of varying severity. But when I think about depression, it seems that it often, or perhaps even always, excuse me, results from overthinking the past or the future.
Yes.
So, and again, combined with our negativity bias. So we think of, say, a relationship that failed. And then we blame ourselves because we're harshly self-judgmental. And we overthink the failure, our failure, the failure of the relationship. And it's very sad. And sometimes we think about the future. Will I ever be able to have a successful relationship?
Exactly.
Am I worthy of having a successful relationship? And so it's clear that dwelling on the past excessively and dwelling on the future excessively, especially when combined with our negativity bias, leads to depression. And, and we all do this. It's the way our brains are hardwired.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, we go back to the plan. We have to have a plan if we're not only going to cope with this and not jump off a cliff when we're feeling really sad, but actually, can we do more than cope? Can we sink into our true nature of happiness? And the answer is yes, we're all capable of that.
We are all capable of that. And at some point, you have to make the choice, don't you? You know, I think it's healthy to look back and pause for a moment and go, look how far I've come. You know, I faced that challenge, and I came through it, and I came through it stronger. You know, that's a healthy looking back to see how much you have grown, rather than going back and feeling like you're getting sucked back into the same thing again and repeating the same thing. When things come up from the past, it doesn't mean you're back there. It just means it's a familiar place and something's triggered it. Look at it for what it is and let it go. Or maybe it's trying to tell you something, but it's not inviting you to go back.
Well, exactly. And I think when, say, we do our daily practice, we do our gain practice, we sit in a quiet place, we close our eyes, we focus on our breath, and then we go through a contemplative meditation of that for which we're grateful. Painful or uncomfortable experience that we cannot change and therefore must accept. The A in gain is acceptance. Then we go to our intention. And what is our plan? What is it about which we are purposeful? And there we focus on being positive and present.
Yeah.
Can we do this? So we can start with just pausing for 5 seconds at first and noticing what's happening around us. So our eyes are closed. I have an airport to the south in San Jose and one to the north in San Francisco. If I'm quiet and I listen closely, I can often hear an airplane in the distance. So I focus on a sound. It can be a very faint sound in the environment. I focus on the tingling in the bottom of my feet, the pressure of the chair against my body, the sensation of touch, perhaps, of smell, and bringing our focus into the present moment, even for 5 seconds before our mind starts to wander. And then again, being purposeful about guiding our thoughts to something positive and reiterating to ourselves that our plan is to be present and positive. And then we go to non-judgment. And what happens then, Sarah, is that when we are being ungrateful, when we're whining about something, often what we call a first world problem, when we are resisting something painful and thereby increasing our suffering, suffering equals pain times resistance. When we are not being intentional, we're not following our plan, we're sort of lapsing into our old default way of thinking and being. When we're being judgmental, generally in a negative sense, when that happens, we've done our gain meditation for 3 or 4 minutes in the morning, a light bulb goes off. So when we start our day with this contemplation of those four elements, which I think are really the pillars of our spiritual and emotional well-being, when we are being judgmental, when we are overthinking the past or future, a light bulb goes off, we will recognize that we're doing it.
Yeah.
And we can redirect our attention to something positive and adaptive.
Right.
So we are suffering from depression. We're thinking of the way we've failed in the past. We've failed a relationship. You know, we broke up with somebody that we loved. We did it because we were impatient. We were selfish. We were not present. We took for granted, and we blame ourselves. We judge ourselves harshly. Then a little light bulb will go off. If our practice includes non-judgment, if our plan includes letting go of judgment, the light bulb goes off when we start to judge ourselves and we realize I'm being negative and I'm being self-judgmental. Let's just drop that and return our focus to the present moment and to the benefits and all the wonderful things that we're experiencing in this moment.
Even if the moment is chaotic, you know, it's a, you're in a turmoil, you know, by just simply taking the breath and being present in the moment, that the turmoil, you become the eye of the hurricane rather than a part of the hurricane, right? Is that we need to know how to center ourselves even amongst the chaos. It's not always about being able to find that quiet place and be able to meditate peacefully. It's finding that peace within that chaos. And that is going into yourself and going into that center, that space, that place of self-love and trust. And that no matter what's going on around you, you can come back home to yourself and center yourself. And then you're no longer a part of that tornado. You're in, you know, you're right down in the center, just drop down. You don't have to be a part of it anymore.
Absolutely. Well, the chaos often comes from overthinking the future. And, you know, again, with our negativity bias, we tend to catastrophize. So we're thinking of the worst thing that might happen. And we're in that process focusing on things that appear to represent chaos. But that's because we're focusing our thoughts on what's about to happen or what might happen rather than the present moment. In the present moment, there's no chaos, right? Chaos is a product of our maladaptive obsession with the future and to some extent, even the past. So what might happen? You know, then you start to think about all these things that are going on that seems out of control. But if you bring your attention back to the present moment, it becomes much more clear what the right thing is to do right now.
Yeah.
And so again, I think this is our constant churning of thoughts that are other than the present moment.
And I mean, even if something's happening to you right this moment and you're in the midst of it, you can still go into kind of the present. Okay, this is presently happening to you, but if you're in panic mode, if you're in fear mode, then you know everything about you is going to clump up and there's going to be no solution. You're not going to see anything. So even if something's happening to you in the moment that is out of your control, if you do calm down and center yourself, you're going to see a solution to the problem. You're going to see a way out because you're in that clarity. We're not in clarity when we're in panic.
Yeah, and I think that's where acceptance comes in. You know, let's consider having pain. So, you know, I had chronic back pain for many years, and we've all had physically painful experiences. The pain is magnified by our resistance to it. And there are lots of ways to resist pain, whether it's emotional pain or physical pain. And thinking about, the pain is just going to be there forever. It's going to get worse. Focusing on the future of our pain is a way of resisting it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, feeling sorry for ourselves is a way of resisting it. You know, why do I have to have this pain? Why me? And if we, again, that light bulb goes off and we go back to acceptance, open our heart to it, bring it closer, bring it in.
Mm-hmm.
We can manage it.
You know,
when we really open our heart to that discomfort.
Like you would a friend in trouble.
Yes.
Right. Nurture it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when we do that, I think we find that it's quite manageable in general.
I live with pain all the time with fibromyalgia, and I've learned to partner with it. And sometimes it has a voice that says, I'm in charge now, and I have to give in. You know, that its voice is stronger and it's telling me I'm overdoing it and I need to take some time out. If I listen in respect, I'll take the time out I need and then I can come back and go about my production. If I don't, I'm going to get the old little whackaroo and flatten out. I live in what I would call, it's not necessarily what some people may call it pain, but discomfort all the time. And you learn to live in that. And it's like, there are better days and there are worse days, but this is just the partnership I have. It slows me down with some of the things that I want to do, but it doesn't stop me from excelling in other things. So I think it's whenever you have something that you might look at as a challenge or an obstacle in your life, it is to look at, okay, it doesn't allow me to do A, B, and C, but I can do X, Y, and Z, and that's where I will concentrate. And I know that I can't do the A, B, and C. That's fair enough. And that I've also got to respect the condition that I'm in and not overextend it. Otherwise, I'll pay the price for it. It's just the balance. It's just the management of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, I would refer to the GAIN acronym. Mm-hmm. You're feeling physical, pain, exhaustion, but you're grateful that your legs work, you're able to get up and walk around.
Yeah.
You have the luxury of seeking a place to go lie down for a half an hour if you need to. You know, you have a beautiful home, you have a comfortable, warm, safe place. So you go to your gratitude when you find that you're capitulating to the pain. And the next thing you go to is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can manage this.
Yes.
I can open my heart, let this in, and whether you want to think of it as a partner or in some other way, but accepting it as what it is and not making it worse by resisting it.
Or complaining about it. You know, it is a condition that I have, and I probably will always have because they have not yet found a cure for it. And there's many people say, oh, you just need to do this and you just need to do that. And I think this is something that we also need to respect of other people. Some people are their diagnosis and they use it as a crutch and as a way of getting attention. Some people have a condition that they live with and they have found their own management. If they are interested in what you have to offer, they'll ask. But please don't come at them and say, I've got a cure for that. You should do this and assume that they haven't tried anything. Just ask, you know, have you ever considered doing this? And accept their answer, because I think one of the worst things you can do is make a person feel broken because you want to fix them and they won't be fixed your way.
Absolutely. Well, I think, we have to honor each other's acceptance.
Yeah,
So if
exactly.
you have fibromyalgia, you have depression, you have back pain, we have to be sensitive to each other's way of dealing with that.
Exactly. And, you know, be encouraging or supporting. You know, recognize when someone's having a challenging day or as opposed to when they're having a triumphant day. And don't ask of them more than what they can give. Or accept the fact at that time they're unable to give. It's not against you. It's just that that's their limitation at that moment.
Right. Well, we go to the serenity prayer when we think of acceptance. We have to discern between what we can change and what we cannot change. So, with regard to our physical bodies, we need our plan. Our plan for today includes having good sleep hygiene. So, making sure that our bodies have an opportunity to rest and recuperate. It also includes exercise. So our plan for today includes walking, jogging, cycling. There are lots of ways to get exercise, and this is a way of nourishing our bodies. And the third element besides sleep and exercise is nutrition. Today, our plan should include focusing on eating healthy, maybe eating a little bit lower on the food chain, more of a plant-based diet. And so when we've taken care of our sleep, exercise, and nutrition, and our bodies are still experiencing fatigue or pain, and we've done our daily practice, our spiritual practice, if you will, and this pain persists, it appears that we cannot change it. And so at that point, the focus is really on acceptance. But we need to take care of the basics first, and that really should be a part of our plan is caring for our physical body.
And you know what we've noticed in the world is that there is more food accessibility than ever before, but less nutrition. And you know, a lot of people that kind of have the diet of junk food are perpetually hungry because they're not getting their nutrition. And there are people that are eating abundance of nutrition through plant-based food. I eat a great deal of vegetables, and I'm 80% vegan. I've got that 20% depending where I am and who I'm with. That the food that you are eating is something that is truly going to fortify you because it has the nutrition in it. It hasn't been, you know, killed out of it. You eat less when you eat well.
Yeah.
Right?
Again, I think that should be, we started talking about our plan, not our long-term goals, not necessarily our New Year's resolution, but our plan for today. And I think that plan needs to include a focus on what we eat. And if we don't have that purposefulness about what we consume, we lapse into our somewhat lazy behavior and we will just pick up whatever is around us. And I can say, for example, that in the hospital, there's lots of opportunity to eat unhealthy stuff because families in their gratitude will give a big box of See's candy to the nursing station. People bring in baked goods and so on. And so if we just aren't paying attention, if we lapse into our sort of lazy eating style, mm-hmm. then we're going to eat a lot of sugary and so-called comfort foods.
Yeah.
Will tend to give us a little bit of a boost in energy very temporarily.
Very temporary. A bigger crash.
So again, we have to be deliberate and purposeful about the way we eat.
But I think it's also in how we eat. You know, it's slow down, chew and digest. When you eat with gratitude, you know, this is kind of one of the reasons why people pray. Pray, you know, thank you for the food that we're eating. If you could just even just look at the food and go, thank you. Thank you for the nourishment you're about to give me. And I think that, you know, one thing we don't realize is we actually change the chemistry of what we eat, you know, of our own chemistry with negativity. And that if we could step into that gratitude, the chemistry of what we eat is nourishing more, I think, because I think our whole body digests it and absorbs it in a different way.
Absolutely. No, I like what you said about slow eating.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of got a bit of press, you know, a bit of attention as a new thing, mm-hmm. you know, eating and doing other things slowly.
Yes.
And then it sort of disappeared from the media. But yeah. I think it's important, you know, one thing I discuss with my trainees is being mindful.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness, which is awareness of the present moment
mm-hmm.
on purpose, non-judgmentally.
Yeah.
I think you have the gain elements in that definition, which is being aware of the present moment, which will bring gratitude and acceptance on purpose,
mm-hmm.
intention, non-judgmentally.
Right.
So when we're eating, consider taking one mindful bite of food. And that means closing our eyes, perhaps, chewing it very slowly,
mm-hmm.
being aware of the present moment, being aware of the tastes, depending on what part of our tongue is encountering mm-hmm. the food, noticing the flavors, noticing the texture. As an exercise, just consider taking one mindful bite of food each day. And, you know, maybe this isn't going to be when you're having a quick lunch on sit down rounds or at a lecture, what have you. Mm-hmm. Perhaps when you go home for dinner,
mm-hmm.
just consider having one mindful bite of food. If you have a partner, consider doing it together.
Yeah.
Let's close our eyes and have this next bite and just take it slowly, savor it, really focus on it, have gratitude for where the food came from.
Yes.
Did somebody plant that
mm-hmm.
seed and then nourish the growing seedling and plant and harvest it and ship it, and it was placed in a bundle and put on the grocery shelf, and you know what a miracle it is.
Yes.
To have this food.
Right.
And consider all those things while we're enjoying it slowly.
I think this is why even cooking at home and getting your family to all be a part of it. My little 22-month-old, even though he can't do much, you know, he's up there on his little stool while mum's cooking and stirring something, probably making more mess than not, but he's a part of it, right? And you get the kids to set the table and, you know, part of the dishes. And to that, this is the part of the gratitude where we are all participating. And I used to have round table because I like having even conversation. There's no head of the table. Everybody is one at the table, and would go around, you know, how was your day? And look at it as a wonderful place to share. You're sharing good food. You're sharing good stories. You're coming together. But again, people are so much in a rush to go somewhere that they don't allow the time. Switch off all the phones. Switch them all off and be present at that mealtime with each other. Enjoy the food with gratitude, but enjoy each other.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the loss of separation is love.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you said even about cooking, and you talk mm-hmm. about being present. You know, again, this brings gratitude. Being present with the food while mm-hmm. you prepare it. Really appreciating how that bunch of carrots got onto your counter and onto your cutting board, you know, as you slice the carrots or what mm-hmm. have you. You know, I think that cooking can be a wonderful way to really get in touch with what we're eating.
Yes.
And if we slow it down a little bit, all the more so.
Yeah. Yeah, again, being present. You know, we've become everything has become fast. Fast food, fast this, fast, information. And it's like we are busy digesting things that we don't even need. And if we are more present, do I need that right now? Is it's the fleeting moment if I need it, and because it's so instant, I can get it, but did I really need it? Whereas if you are present with the moment, no, I don't need it. I can pass. Right? But we're not present with ourselves. We don't listen to ourselves from the inside out. We're too busy listening to everything on the outside. And let's face it, everything on the outside is only feeding us the negativity, not the possibilities that can come from it.
Well, as you said, I think we're surrounded by the sort of point and click
Yeah.
world, sound bites, the news cycle,
Headlines, yes.
people rushing. And so again, our tendency is to be swept up in that
Yeah.
and to find that, let's say we're preparing a meal, why are we hurrying
Yeah.
to prepare it? Let's slow down. But again, this requires intention.
Yeah.
So I think we really have to focus on our daily plan if we want to be present. And that presence means manifest in everything that we do. I mean, the more the better. The
Yeah.
way we cook, the way we take care of our bodies, the way we bathe, the way we dress, the way we converse, the way we interact with one another. The way we have a meal, all of it with a plan, with intention.
Being
And I
present.
think, yes, I think we can really be much happier and enjoy things one moment at a time, but we have to be deliberate.
Right. And we may have a plan for the day, and then something comes up, interrupt us, and we don't get to finish what we wanted to do. It's okay. There is a tomorrow. Unless it's absolutely dire that you really need to do it today. Can it go for tomorrow? Yes. Okay. And chill out.
Yeah,
Let
well,
it go.
yeah, I think sometimes we hurry needlessly because we think we have to get everything done all at once. But so often that's not really the case.
I find that my own spirit pushes me back. I have all these ideas and blah, blah, I want to do this, blah, 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 I don't want to do that. And like all of them, they say, these are all great ideas. You're going to get them done. But we're only going to give you the energy and the vision to do it. One at a time.
Yeah,
And I
that's what
want to go and
we
get
do.
everything done at once. And it's like, just take a breath and concentrate on one thing at a time. Now it's not daunting. Now, even if the obstacles with tech comes up or this comes up, it's okay. I can deal with it. I'm focusing one thing at a time. And I'm not trying to do so much that it's become overwhelming.
Absolutely. Well, we only have one thought at a time.
That we can act on. We can have a dozen thoughts, but one thought that we need to act on.
Well, I think we only really have one thought at a time. We might think that we're multitasking and multi-thinking, but when it comes right down to it, we can only have one thought at a time. It may be very fleeting, and then we're on to the next and the next. And it seems like we had a bunch of thoughts at the same time, but we can only have one thought at a time. We can only do one thing at a time. We can jump back and forth between them
Yes.
very quickly and make it seem as though we're doing
Dozen
many tasks
things.
at the same time, but actually we're only doing one thing at a time.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to embrace that.
Yeah, as a mother, we're always multitasking, but you're right. We've just got six things on the go at the time, but we're literally going from one to the next very efficiently. And it looks like we're doing it all at once. Because I think, motherhood definitely, it throws you into good management skills, and that there are going to be dozens of things happening on that are needing to all happen at once, and it's how to pay attention to the important thing at the moment, and also paying attention there's something on the stove and there's this and that, and it's how to navigate, through the obstacles while still paying attention to everything that's needed to be paid attention to.
Absolutely. Well, I take my hat off to mothers who, all of whom are heroes, in fact.
Well, yeah, it's something that we learn to do. And of course, then you see people bring that into the business world and, you know, they become those multitaskers as well, which sometimes, you know, is different. And, you know, you may be able to do da 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 da, kind of navigate all these balls in the air at once. But the people that are around you may not be on that same plane, or the people, your clientele may not be. And it's to remember that you need to be present with whomever you're present with, employee or client at the time, and don't expect them to have all their balls in the air at the same time.
Yes, I agree. I think good communication between people requires that we slow it down a little bit and really, you know, appreciate each step, each moment. And, you know, we really can't have two conversations at once. We can't do two things well at once.
No, not
So,
well.
yes, I think focusing on the present moment and bringing that into the way we interact with others is important in business as well as in our personal lives.
You know, I've just done a show on journalism with a journalist out of England, and you know, she had come out of journalism for 7 years and then gone back in it. And I was asking her about kind of the difference now, and you know, and I often refer to that life has become very much, as you said, that soundbite, that headline. And we get caught up in the soundbite and the headline without looking at the content or the context of the information. And I think we have more knowledge at our fingertips today than ever in the history of time. Yet we seem to have less comprehension of the knowledge. And I think that is all because we don't take the time to read, to digest what we've read. What does it mean to us? How do I respond to this? Because we're on to the next.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. It's about very, you know, challenging to be a journalist because I think at least it seems that those who are reading and listening are expecting little bites. And you know, if you want to be a good journalist, I think you have to really get into the depths of a particular event or idea. And I think that we as a public are losing our patience with the depth of knowledge that you know, really ought to be appreciated and embraced.
Ought to be appreciated. You know, we're wondering what's going on and why, you know, everything is in such turmoil. You know, why are we having famine? Why are we having, we know why we've got climate change. That's us. I mean, everything that's wrong with the world is we've created ourselves. But we don't have to stay there. We have the power within us. Every single one of us has the power to be the change that this world needs, that this world seeks, to be the love that we seek, to be the peace that we seek. And if we seek it and find it within us, we become that peace and love that the world needs. And the only way we're going to change things is with everybody taking ownership and accountability for their own lives and their own choices. It's not government or anybody else's responsibility. It is ours, whether we like it or not.
Well, you know, the government is composed of individuals. It's not just some big megalithic thing. It's composed of individuals. And yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think we sometimes just get despondent over what's happening, and it seems like we can't do anything about it. But again, I think we need to go back to the discernment between what we can change and what we cannot change. And we can make a difference, even if it's just one person at a time, one deed at a time. And if that's all we can do, then let's focus on that and do something positive and meaningful.
You know, I'm 68, you said you're 70, and we've realized that slowing down is good. Slowing down is paying attention. Slowing down is being able to address what is needed in front of you right now. Slowing down gives us the clarity that we are needing right now, gives us the strength and the focus that we need right now. When we're young, we're just in a hurry to grow up and hurry to do changes and hurry to do all of that. And then we find ourselves in the turmoil. And it's like, well, how do I get out of that? Wouldn't it be nice if we could teach our youth, our young people, to learn to slow down and be present with their life, be more deliberate with their thoughtful actions, be a person that comes from a place of kindness and love to bring about that kindness and love in the world, and to understand they are the solution or the problem of the future, and that slowing down and being present is one of the greatest tools they'll ever have in their life.
Well, don't age me too much. I said I was in my seventh decade.
Okay.
So that means I'm 60 plus.
Okay.
Not yet
I'm
70.
Older than you. I'm your senior here.
No, I didn't say you were older than me either, but I think we're fairly close in age.
Okay.
But yes, I mean, that's the sense that if I'd only known then what I know now.
Yes.
And I think we do have to appreciate that there's an arc of our lives. So it's much more clear now, based on our decades of experience and also where we are now in life, to be circumspect and to see the wisdom of slowing down, see the wisdom of being present, you know, embrace our gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. So I fully understand that at my stage, you know, it's easier for me to take a breath and slow down. When I was, you know, in my fourth decade, for example, I was running as fast as I could and, you know, very distracted with my career and, you know, again, overly focused on the future and in some ways the past. But, you know, what is the future going to bring? You know, I want to be financially secure. I want my family to be healthy and well cared for. I want my kids to get into good schools. And so there's a, you know, it is our true nature to be very distracted by the past and the future. It's easier to be a little bit slower and more present at this stage. However, it's doable at any age. And
that's the
you
point.
Know, the fact is that the solution is straightforward and simple. And that's why I think that even a 3-minute meditation in the morning over the very simple, essential domains of gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment are appropriate practice at any age. And, you know, it's the truth is very simple. And the practice generating a plan doesn't take a lot of time.
No.
But it does take purpose. We have to be committed to these ideals and to being happier people, and really kind of sinking into our true nature. And that can happen at the age of 15 or 27 or 52, or in fact, in our seventh decade.
I think one of the things is not to look at life as a beginning and end, as a line, but as a circle, right? And that, you know, in many, many cultures, they look to the wise ones, their elders, for the knowledge and the wisdom for them to take with them on their youthful journey. And, you know, the Western world is more like, you're out to pasture, I'm not going to listen to you. And I think we could go back to that culture of that circle, where we understand that the elders have so much to show us and give us. And the thing is, they can learn to be present while they're running, right? We're not running anymore, we're slowed down, but they could still learn to be present in their running. They could be more thoughtful on the seeds they're planting, that they're nurturing for the tomorrows. They could be more deliberate on why they want to plant those seeds, what the outcome they would like to see, and how to nurture it, but then allow it to be. But that, I think that comes from the elder's wisdom being imparted to the child, which as a society, we seem to have separated ourselves from youth and age rather than the circle of life and appreciating. We appreciate their youthful gesture, their youthful enthusiasm, but let's give them some beautiful skills and tools they can take with them so they can really be fortified on their journey.
Yes, I mean, it's life is a process. Everything in life is a process. And we learn and progress in baby steps. So let's recognize that at any age and focus on each tiny step. And as you said earlier, we will recognize at some stage how far we've come. But it happens in little, you know, one step at a time and baby steps. And so let's be patient. Let's understand that everything is a process. There is no destination. And you know, this will help us be less self-judgmental.
Oh, yeah, or less selfish, you know, more self-aware, which I think is something that's been lost too, is the self-awareness. You know, we've become so much of comparison and competing with others. We've lost the awareness of who self is. So I think self-awareness is really, really important. And, you know, all we have to do is look at nature. You know, nature doesn't speed up just because evolution has. It's still going to grow at the time it needs to grow. And as long as we water it and nurture it and it gets what it needs to grow, it will grow into its own abundance when the time is right. It's us as human beings have decided that we're in a rush. What are you in a rush for? To get to your destination? Well, that's your exit from this body when your spirit moves on. The journey of life is what you are here for, the experience of that journey. Every single step that you take is something that goes into your beautiful psyche as part of your little encyclopedia of your life, right? And we want to be able to pass that knowledge on, but we want to absorb all the experiences, even good or bad. We want to absorb them along the way because that is a part of life's journey.
Well, I'm glad you brought up nature. And I think that many of us are suffering from a bit of the blues. We talked about depression. I think that, you know, one manifestation of the chronic stress I think we've all been experiencing with this multifactorial assault on our happiness, COVID, war, food shortages, divisiveness in politics and society in general, et cetera. When we're out in nature, when we're taking that walk in the forest, we see that the present is where the beauty lies. You know, I think it's really looking up at the canopy and the treetops with the light filtering down and feeling the sensation of the pine needles on the bottom of our feet and enjoying the aroma of the fresh air that the trees and the plants and the ferns are generating. This kind of brings us to the present moment. And it's such an important recognition of the fact that our problems are finite and relatively small for the most part. And I think that's one reason that people get sad in the wintertime, that they are spending so much time indoors and not enough time out in nature. And even just a short walk around the neighborhood, pausing to enjoy the splendor of the trees and the flowers or, you know, the shrubs or what have you, whether they're blooming or not, I think puts us back in touch with this important essence of our nature. And I do think when we spend too much time indoors, which many of us do in the wintertime, our world seems to shrink. And our problems seem to grow. And so again, I think part of our plan does have to be to get outside, bundle up, take an umbrella, put on the appropriate footwear, and just go out and take a walk, even if it's just around the block.
And leave the phone off, or if you carry it with you, no headphones, listen to nature. It talks to you all the time. You know, trees, breeze, and water are incredibly important to me. I love a breeze. It just blows away the cobwebs. I love the trees and the way they talk to you. They're always rustling some wonderful information. And, you know, the ocean and the way the water just, your river, you know, laps up against the shore, that wonderful conduit there. Nature has all those answers for us. But if we're busy listening to something else, we're not paying attention to the language of nature. You may not be able to understand it from the human intellect, but your spiritual intellect is most certainly absorbing it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's absolutely vital to be outside and to pay attention to the magic all around us. It's just essential to our well-being.
It most certainly is. And you know, the other thing is that I've had people in the past to say, because I'm always saying that really life is about an open heart. Whether your heart's been broken or crushed, it doesn't matter. Open up that heart, let it learn to love again. And they've said to me, but how do I do that? And I said, well, be around nature. Watch the birds in the trees and the wonderful tweets that they're making. Watch a dog chasing a stick. Watch a child chasing a dog. Watch the simple joys of life all around you. If that doesn't open up your heart or warm your heart, I don't know what will. Be around the things that give you the ah moment. The smile on your face. If your face is smiling and you've just stopped to absorb for the moment, your heart is opening.
Yes, and I think, we're back to the plan. We're back to that we have to be deliberate.
Yes.
And I think that with all of the virtual meetings and people working from home, we spend a lot of time indoors. We spend a lot of time in sweatpants. And we can forget about going outside and really communing with nature. And so that really needs to be part of our plan.
It does. And again, it's like, yeah, you want to achieve A, B, C, D, D, all the way through the alphabet, but you're not going to get to Z without going through all the other letters. So, plan what you feel you really can cope with. And if you manage to get something done faster, fantastic. You can start on the next, or you can take that time out for yourself, right? But the deliberate of I am engaged and participating in my own existence.
Yeah, well put. Beautiful.
We're too busy looking and trying to live from the outside in, and it's only when we're engaged with our inside out that we truly actually understand the gift of life itself
Yes.
and our place in it, and that each one of us is a gift.
Well, we're back to gratitude. Let's remember what a gift life is and be grateful for all the blessings that we experience.
How many people have said, oh, I wish I had appreciated that when I had it? Or I wish I had respected that when I had it? Because we've become too complacent or too blasé, and we haven't stepped into that gratitude of what we truly do have. And we've got to let people in our lives know we appreciate them. We love them, or we care for them. And that means we've got to reach out sometimes and just a message. How are you doing? Hey, heads up. Here's a smile. Little things of appreciation. I see you. I care for you. I acknowledge you can go an awful long way. Because I think a lot of the depression is from people feeling disconnected. And if we let them know we see you, we hear you, we're here for you, then that gives them, I'm seen, I'm heard. I can be a part of life.
Absolutely. Well, I think when we embrace gratitude, it radiates and it shows, it really is revealed to others around us too, and it's infectious.
Yes, it is. And we want that kind of infection to spread. We really
Absolutely.
do. That's the kind of infection that really gives us gain, and eases the pain. So, will you tell people about the book Gain Without Pain, the happiness handbook for healthcare professionals, and tell us about that. Also, tell us how people can get hold of you and what you may be offering people right now.
Sure. Well, my website is greghammermd.com, GREGHAMMERMD.com. There's a link to the book there. There's a lot of media there. Our time together, Sarah, will probably show up there. So yes, the book is really not just for healthcare professionals. It's really about the GAIN practice. Gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And so the book was published in May of 2020. And of course, I'm still talking about it. I'm working right now on a book about teenagers. So it's really for parents and teachers, school administrators, counselors, social workers. And it's a mindfulness-based approach to improving the lives of our teens.
Oh, I'm glad you're doing that. And please come back and share that book. I have a wonderful woman who created an entire yoga practice and meditation practice for teens, you know, teaching them how to center, how to deal with stress, how to be present. And another teacher that I have on this last week, which is about teaching our children from a place where they learn and not trying to fit them all in one box of learning. So, you know, there's an awful lot. It's hard being a teenager. Hormonally,
Yes.
they're changing. Environmentally, they're changing. Society is changing. Expectation of them is changing. And we bombard them with a lot of schooling. And you've now got to know what you want to do for the rest of your life. And it's, I think we put too much pressure on them. And it's really hard for them to navigate. So I'm glad you're writing a book on that, because it's, if you have a kid, they're going to get to teenage years. And it's like having a toddler all over again. So yes, we need that handbook for sure. So please come back and share with us on that one. You're also on social media, so you're on Facebook, Greg Hammond, MD, and LinkedIn, Greg Hammer, and of course, obviously, greghammermd.com, and they can find you there. Your book is on Amazon. Please come back and listen to the show that he did with us last time. You know, last time we talked about some wonderful things, non-judgment, you know, the mindfulness of it. So we reiterated that, but we really did concentrate on it. So come back and listen to that show too. And, you know, thanks so much for being with us here again, Greg. You know, it's a good reminder. Be focused, be intentional. Be mindful, and the one step at a time. Have a plan.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sarah. It's always wonderful speaking with you.
I look forward to our next time together. Until next time, folks, please take a breath, be present, be mindful, and remember, just one step at a time. You'll get there. Bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Find all of our shows on selfdiscoverymedia.com under podcasts or selfdiscoverymedia/shows. And for all our current shows, go to What's New. We are supported by you, the audience. You'll see a nice big shiny blue button for one-time donations, or follow us on Patreon, and you will be able to support us there. We enjoy bringing you such wisdom. And the next show will be up in just a moment.